So hey guys, thanks to Anchor. They're the ones that distribute my podcast. They have all the podcast tools, and check them out at anchor.com and they can help you with your podcast. So thanks again. And of course, Solder Weld, it's always Solder Weld. Lance and Zeke over Solder Weld, they make the Alcop and the 15% round rod and the Alusol and the Multisol and the Hot Block. And every podcast is sponsored by them. We've got tons of them out there. And those guys are just great guys. They're super supportive of the HVAC refrigeration and off-road community. You can check them out at solderweld.com. That's www.solderweld.com. And like I said, great guys. They're all in, and they're there for you if you're in the HVAC refrigeration business. So check them out at solderweld.com. So today's podcast is going to be, I'm excited to do this one. I'm excited to do all of them, but this one here I've really been looking forward to. And this is Keith Flores. And Keith owns, that's right, Keith Flores, right?
Yes, okay. That is correct.
And Keith Flores, and he owns Smart Choice Heating and Air Conditioning, or Air Conditioning and Heating, correct?
Heating and Air Conditioning,
Heating and Air Conditioning. And he is also on Instagram, HVAC God. But we're not going to focus on the Instagram. We're going to be focusing on Keith, because Keith is an owner and has had some successes and failures. And Keith is actually going to be part of our entrepreneur series. And he's just a great guy. And so welcome, Keith.
Well, I appreciate that intro. And I gotta say, I love that Solder Weld and you guys are doing stuff together, because I had Lance from Altu Smart Choice recently, right before this COVID stuff hit, and he was an amazing guy, and we've literally done so much work together since then. So it's great to have you guys a part of the team.
Yeah, he actually showed up one day on my social media. And I was kind of like looking at him, and I was watching him do some stuff. And I think this was like 4 years ago, I think. And I reached out to him, and I'm like, hey, dude, if you ever come to Phoenix, like, let's do some stuff. And him and Zeke showed up, and it was pouring down rain. And they drove down. Now they fly, but they drove down, and we did an Instagram live. And one of my Instagrammers in Los Angeles, Andrew, said, hey, if it's that great, put it on your hand. And we, okay. And Lance was like, what? What are you going to do? And I go, we packed all this hot block in my hand. And I looked at Zeke, are you ready? And Zeke's like, bro, there's no way. There's no way. And we had never done it before. We didn't even practice it. And so Zeke takes the torch to my hand, and Lance is out in the outside in the rain, and people are going, no way. And Zeke and Lance is like, don't do this home. Don't do this at home. This is not what you want to do. This is, we don't recommend it. We're not going to pay for, this. Don't do it. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, it's just, and I started going, oh my God, my hand. And, Zeke pulls the flame away, and he goes, did you hurt your hand? I'm like, no, dude, I was messing with you. And I go, this is crazy. And people were like blown away. And we did that for the first time unscripted about 4 years ago. Lance had no idea what was going to happen. And that's putting your faith. Like, I had never really seen Hot Block, but that I put 100% of my faith into Lance and Zeke on the Hot Block and took a torch to my hand. And now everybody seems to do it. But the first time. What's that?
They did the same thing, and when they came out, like, literally Lance reached out to me, and it was before all the shutdowns and everything, and Lance goes, texted me like 2 days prior for him coming out. He goes, do you still want me to come out? I said, yeah, we're excited. We can't wait. And he said he was the only person on the flight. So he basically had a private flight out here to Anaheim, and one of the first things I told him, I said, hey, I'm going to have one of my plumbers put their hands up in the air. We're going to put some hot block on it, and I want to watch it live. And my plumber kind of looked at me and said, are you kidding me? I said, no, come on, let's do this. And right off the bat, we said, hey, don't try this at home. We don't advise this, but it was cool to see. Yeah, they got a phenomenal product, and their customer service and support is out of control. I really like those guys. And I never even met him before, never nothing, and he just literally, I reached out to him through social media, and all of a sudden, he was just out there, and me and him chat back and forth all the time now through social media. It's pretty cool. They're really cool people.
Yeah, they're good people. So
So
today we're going to talk about Keith. This can't be all about Lance, even though Lance is going to be like, it's all me. This is about Keith, because Keith's story is pretty cool, and I heard him on another podcast, and on a digital podcast, and I was listening to him on the way home, and Keith said a bunch of stuff. And so Keith has some huge successes, and Keith has also had some huge, not family losses, but just business losses that really changed him in the way that he moved about and moved into businesses. And every time he lost one and built one, it was a learning thing, but he's still basically a tech. So how did you get into the field? I mean, what is your true background? How did you get into AC?
So my true background is, I was pretty much born into this industry. Not necessarily my dad. My dad was a hardcore blue-collar guy. Owned a small portion of a large HVAC company after he retired. And
who was that?
Because
you were born and raised here in Orange County, right?
No, Northern California. So up in the Fairfield area, the Bay Area.
Oh, gotcha. What was the name of the company, though, that Dad had?
Quality Air Systems. They're no longer around. They got blown up by the big boys, Bugler Heating Air. And it was my dad, my uncles, and my brother-in-law was, their field guy. Their field, an operations manager back then, because they were 100% new construction. So my brother-in-law, always had a bunch of side jobs, rat jobs, whatever you want to call them. And I was about 12 years old, and he hit me up one day and said, hey, you want to come do some duct work with me? I didn't know much. And I said, yeah, I'll go. And I went on the weekend with him. We went out to the job. I remember exactly the home and everything to this day. I can remember the guy's name. And my brother-in-law said, hey, call under there. He showed me out front. Hey, take all this stuff apart, and then crawl under there, put this stuff together, take this gray stuff, duct tape, and just tape it onto these little, boxes, which were, PH1s, and then start strapping it up. It kind of showed me, it must have looked terrible by the time I was done, but I loved being under there. I was getting dirty. I was, just having fun underneath the house, and I can hear my brother-in-law up top laughing and joking around with the customer, and, we were done with the job. It was, a Saturday. The Sunday, I rode my bike over to his house, and he pulled out, some cash out of his freezer and said, here you go, give me $200. And I'm 12 years old, and I'm like, oh, my God, I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And, I can just paint this, and I just, after that, I just hit him up every weekend, summers. I just started, that early, 12 years old. Just really getting after it, and worked my way up. I started doing table layout for that shop. I started running jobs. I really started, cleaning the toilets and going and fetching them all coffee and that type of stuff, because we're a good-sized company. We're about 300 employees. And, I got no love from the uncles or pops or my brother-in-law. They just made me do all the grunt work, and I worked my way up and, started running jobs by the time I was, 19, 20 years old. And, that was all new construction. And I started getting recruited by a guy named Lou Snavely, who was running, Dial One up in Rockland, California. And, he recruited me and said, hey, I'll pay you $10,000. This is, back in early 90s. And said, I'll pay you $10,000 to come to work for me. I said, what? And he said, yes, it's called considered a sign-on bonus. And I just thought he was nuts. And I told my family, and they said, you can't make that type of money in this industry. And I said, I'm going to give it a shot. And I left and went to work for him and really never looked back. He taught me a lot. Didn't teach me enough, you know, because I started off as just an installer for them, and, you know, piecework, so I'd go in and run one or two jobs a day and get paid a ton of money. And one season I got slow, and he asked me, you know, hey, would you like to run a service call? I think you'd be good at it. And I said, sure. And I went and ran that service call and sold the job. And after I sold the job, I called him up and I said, can I install this one? The customers really liked me. And he said, yeah, you can install it. So then I started double dipping. And what I would do is go out, sell the job, then install the job. Sell the job, then install the job. And it just became, you know, second nature for me, and I loved it. And I really, you know, I missed that part of the job, to be honest, because it was just, you know, low maintenance for me, and I like crawling around, I like getting dirty, I like fixing things, I, you know, seeing new places every day, meeting new people every day, and then I just started working my way up to service manager, you know, operations manager, sales manager, and eventually, you know, we'll call it a GM, but it was a rough GM, and because he was still running all the P&Ls and the, you know, all that back end stuff, and I decided, you know, hey, what? I should go into business for myself. And my buddy back then,
But before you get into the story about your business,
yep,
I want to finish out about your dad. So it sounds like that your dad and everybody gave you huge support. Because it's hard for a family member to leave a family business.
No. We didn't talk for years after that.
So when you left, it was not a good subject.
No, we didn't talk for years. I didn't talk to my brother-in-law for years. I didn't talk to my dad for years. I didn't talk to my uncles. It was not a good parting of the ways, just to say the least. And that was me, you know, being really stubborn, arrogant back then. You know, they didn't see what I was seeing. You know, most people get into the blue-collar trades because they don't think, you know, like an entrepreneur, they don't see it as you're going to make good money. They don't see, like, the vision. And back then, I was really closed off because I was just a new construction guy, and you know, this guy, Lee Snavely, was telling me how much money I can make, and I was going, no way, you know, and so, yeah, my family did not give their blessing on that whatsoever. The only person I was even talking to during those times was probably my mom and my two sisters, because both brother-in-laws are in the industry. Let's see, I have four or five uncles in the industry and probably 10, 11 cousins. And even female cousins that are all, and still to this day, they're all in the end. So I left the family business, but it was, I don't know. I look back now and, you know, we all kind of laugh about it now because, you know, I became, you know, who I am now because of the struggle that my dad put me through, my brother-in-law put me through. I feel like it made me the person I am today.
You and your dad, and you guys eventually started talking again, and I get that because you were formed. Your dad is the one that formed you and all that, and you started talking again. How did the relationship go? Was it a slow hello? How you doing? How's things? Or what finally happened business-wise to you that maybe dad said, I need to talk, or was it the other way around?
It was the other way around. Not saying I was a bigger man, but my dad is, back then, he was really stubborn. You know, I'm Mexican and Italian, so that gives me that temper, that hothead, and my dad's full-blooded Mexican, and he has a little bit of a temper, so we didn't see eye to eye. It was, you know, what took it, I think, more than anything was, you know, I started having kids. My dad started getting a little older. My brother-in-law, you know, had his kids. We just all started developing our own lives, and even to this day, we don't talk on a daily basis, but we're all, you know, still family. We still talk. I do talk to my brother-in-law a lot more than I do to anybody else in my family, just because to this day, I still look up to him. He owns Nielsen Mechanical up in the Bay Area, which is a phenomenal resource to me. Big guy in the industry. Not a lot of people know him, but in his side of the industry, because they do restaurants primarily, and they do all the big ones in the city. He is known really well, so I do reach out to him.
What is the name of his company?
Nielsen Mechanical. Yeah, you'll have to check them out, because they build all their own stuff, like their own equipment and stuff. They used to do the fire suppression systems in the kitchen. They do all their own cup metal.
They do hoods and stuff too, right?
What's that?
They do hoods and all that.
Yeah. So, and there's stuff that, I mean, they've done like the Hard Rock Casino. They've done some really cool trick stuff. And that's the part of me, like the kid in me, I love going to restaurants and seeing the really cool stuff. So Matt, I idolize him when it comes to that type of stuff, because he had me do a house. I was young. I was probably 18 years old on 17-mile drive. And this guy's house down in Monterey, we did all copper, everything. And Matt was one of those guys that never was afraid to get into those big jobs. And everybody else was afraid to get into the stainless and the copper. And he was just like, dude, it's only metal. Like, we can make anything. And still to this day, you know, people see me in suits and stuff on my social media, or, you know, giving speeches and stuff like that, and they don't realize that I can go out and I can fix a 10-ton system or a communicating system or build a square around. You know, I have a lot of guys call me out on my social media because, you know, the name, and I go, dude, let me come over to your shop. I'll teach you a thing or two about, you know, how to build a square around, or I can, you know, or you guys can teach me. I don't think I know everything, you know. I reach out to people all the time and ask them, you know, questions, or, you know, I have a 21-year-old son that I really rely on now that has become, you know, a genius to our industry, that he's always researching and digging, trying to figure out what the newest, latest, greatest stuff is. So, but I just, I have done every aspect of this industry. I don't care who you are, but I've done it all. Not saying I've been the greatest at all of them, because, you know, at 30 years old, I started my own company and grew it to $4.5 million in, you know, less than 4 years.
But let's talk about, before you get into that, because you've had multiple businesses, and some of the two have failed, I think is what you said.
No, one failed. I won't even say it was a failure, because I got out clean, and I ended up
Failure is the wrong word then. How about that? You know, tell us then what happened in your very first business, how you grew it from the ground up. I mean, because the reason is that there's a lot of guys that drive around all day long and go, man, if I worked for myself, I would have it made. And they would be, we laugh about it, and we would have it made, like, I would be the man. I could pick and choose when I get up in the morning. I can pick and choose when I want to answer the phone. I'm going to go to the river. I'm going to go to the beach. And it's not that way.
No, not at all. So I was 30 years old, and let's back up. I was 29, and a guy that I got into the AOR side with, Ken Starr, who owns Home Comfort down here in Southern California, big shop. Me and him were like best friends, and he said, hey, let's go into business together. And so we didn't know anything. We were just like, all right, let's give it a shot. And it lasted about a month, and we were using a dad's license, and then we just, like, literally, we didn't even do any paperwork. We just started rolling. We grabbed two trucks and started running under his dad's license, did a couple of installs, and then we had a falling out because we didn't agree with, you know, each other's work ethics. So I started, and so that wasn't even I don't even consider, I just consider a couple side jobs. So I started another company, and this was all me. I thought, like you were just saying, that if I could own my own truck and have a little office, I can do it all myself, right? I can make my own hours. I'm going to make millions of dollars and not have to worry about other people. And I thought I knew it all because I knew how to fix an air conditioner. I knew how to sell an air conditioner. I knew how to make customers happy. I was very foolish, not realizing I didn't know the back inside of things, even though I thought I did. And so I went in and bought three trucks because I knew, all right, I'm going to sell. I need a service tech to back me up, and I need an install crew. And I went to my contractors. I bought three trucks, got a little building, tiny little building, and this is before I even took my contractor's license. I just had the contractor's date, my licensing date, and I knew I could pass it, no problem. And I thought the day I pass it, the day I get my license issued. Well, that's a big fail. So I went in, took the test, aced it, passed it. Then they tell me it's going to be 30 to 45 days before I can get my license. I said, no. I need my license right now because I have trucks, I have advertising. And they said, no, you got to wait. So here I have stuff all scheduled and ready to go, and I have, you know, a one gal doing dispatching for me, and I had three employees and an office, and I'm running out of money fast because, you know, 30 days turned into 60 days, and I was already hemorrhaging money. And as soon as I got that license, I was able to run. And when I ran, I took off then, and I went from 0 to 2.5 million my first year. And how I did that was not knowing anything, not knowing right from wrong. And what I mean right from wrong is marketing wise. I picked up a telephone book back then and opened it up and had a gal in my office start copying and writing all the addresses down. And we hand wrote every night about 150 little postcards to get customers. And then during the day, we would have that same girl call, make outbound calls through the Yellow Pages. That's all, or the White Pages. That's how we grew. And then from that point on, you know, I did full wraps on my trucks. I got a couple billboards, and I just really was out there 7 days a week hustling. And about a year and a half into it, I realized I'm not making any money. I was making way more doing, sales calls, you know, and working for somebody else. And so I started, you know, trying to understand the books. I hired an outside consulting firm, which really just took my money because they were just a firm that literally never did the HVAC business. So I always suggest to people that if you're finding a consultant or somebody that is going to help you, make sure they've been in the industry and done every part of the industry so they can understand where you're coming from. But so these guys, you know, started teaching me a little bit, and by year two, we were breaking even. And so I ended up going, all right, let's add some more trucks. And by that time, I was up to 10 trucks, and it was all self-funded, so I still wasn't making money.
You were funding it all yourself. So did you have an SBA?
No, never. I've never taken a loan out for any of my companies.
So you were 100% debt-free.
Debt-free.
Running a business, 10 trucks, and you weren't making money.
Still wasn't making money. At the end of the month, I was calling, where's he going? And it's because I didn't understand my percentages. You know, I didn't understand a P&L. I didn't know, you know, what I should be spending on. I didn't know where I was making money. I didn't even know where I was losing money. I didn't know, you know, I knew my job were priced right, because, you know, all I did was take my price book from a big shop that I was working for and moved it over to me and just changed it all. So I'm thinking, all right, you know, I didn't realize, you know.
Well, it was profitable for them, but it's not profitable for you.
Yeah, because I wasn't paying attention to what I was paying for equipment back then. I was just, you know, I thought equipment was equipment. That's what I paid for it. I didn't know I could get back in money. I didn't know, you know, I can negotiate better pricing. I didn't know that, you know, all vendors would work with you to get better pricing for you. I didn't know, you know, what my marketing spend should be. I started, you know, just really blowing up, and I was, like, spending, you know, $3,000 on wraps and buying the most state-of-the-art trucks, and then I'd spend $10,000 on, you know, filling them up with parts and supplies and not paying attention to my inventory, and, you know, guys were robbing me blind, and we just, you know, we didn't know. We really didn't know.
But when you, but how long did it take you, though? You say you didn't know, but at the same time, it sounds like you did know, because it was dawning on you somewhere that this isn't right.
Well, after almost year two, I started going, all right, because I made $10,000 on this job and I just got paid $10,000, doesn't mean I can go out and buy a new boat with that $10,000 because I have back-end bills to pay, right? So I started trying to figure out, after year one, I started going, wait a second, you know, I don't have any money. I'm breaking even at the end of every month. Where's the money going? And I started trying to figure it out on my own, and I couldn't pinpoint it. So I thought, all right, after year one, we had four trucks. I said, all right, it's got to be revenue. Let's fix it with top line revenue. So let's go out and buy more trucks. So then you got down payments, and you got more truck insurance. You got, you know, more wraps. You got gas. You got maintenance. But I didn't think of any of that stuff. I just said, all right, dummy, you need to add more trucks. That's going to solve it. You know, top line revenue will solve it. And I was a top line chaser. You can ask anybody that knew me back then. I was running around beating my chest. Hey, I'm 2.5 years in, 3 years in, I'm doing $4 million. And there's guys doing, you know, $700,000, going, how are you doing it? I'm sitting there going, I know what I'm doing, but I had no clue. I really didn't have a clue what I was doing. I would go out and sell a job for $10,000 and, you know, literally have no idea where the money went by the second day, going, where that, you know, $10,000 go? And it could have been, you know, people, you know, taking advantage of me because I didn't do the books myself. I hired somebody or had somebody doing my books for me. And by the end of it, I just, at the end of every week, basically, I'd go, where'd all the money go? And I really, how I fixed it, I'd go out and sell another job. That was my whole thought process. Go out and hustle more. Go out and sell another job. That will fix the problem.
So you were masking, but you were masking the problems.
Yes.
By getting more business, but you weren't controlling your account payable and your account receivables.
Not at all.
Which is huge for a business, because guys who are listening, again, I'm going to go back, that think that they can go work for the man and they're going to become the man and they're going to own their own business, they have to understand, about how much money is coming in compared to how much is going out. And I remember I've had other podcasts before where I've had people say when they get paid, like, it's not your money. Like, remember, it's not your money. If you get a $10,000 job and it says to Keith Flores, mechanical or HVAC God, that's not your money. That goes into the company account to pay for company things like fuel and gas and workers' comp and all these business expenses, and hopefully there's a little something left over that Keith gets to take a check. But inevitably, it's not your money. So you weren't watching any of that. So when did all of it come to a head to where you said, this is all wrong and I need to stop now?
So I met a guy and he was telling me, you know, hey, join our group. And it was one of these, you know, Infinity groups or, you know, one of the ones that everybody's connected to. And I went and met with these guys and they're telling me I should be making, you know, 20%. And I'm going, fuck, explain this to me. And they got me in contact with one of the guys that buys, you know, basically your customer list and your debt and stuff. And I didn't really have much debt because I was self-funded. And I just was literally, I love this industry. So everybody that's listened, I love this industry. This is the most amazing industry that you can ever be a part of. You can make whatever you want.
But there's a but to it.
There is a but to it. But you've got to know what you want to do, and you've got to be understanding and willing to make changes. And so during that time, I was courted by this major company, and they basically told me, look, we'll help you out here, but we want you to come to work for us. And I was going, man, I don't want to go to work for you guys. I thought I was doing okay, and then as they dove into my books, they had these controllers, these guys all come out, they looked at my books, and they're going, dude, how are you even surviving? And I'm going, what? Look at this place. I'm doing $4.5 million in less than 4 years. Like, what are you talking about? And they're like, we don't understand how you're surviving. My marketing spend was something like 40%, and, you know, if you want to grow, you know, I tell people nowadays, I go, if you want to grow, you want to keep it around 8%. Here, I'm spending 20%. I have no idea. But I had no idea what my labor costs were. And they were like, Keith, you know how to generate revenue. You know how to grow a business. You just don't know the back end. Let us show you what to do. Like, let us teach you this stuff. And so in the end, worked it out with them, and they hired me, and those were my college years, I always tell everybody, because I went to work for a big corporation that was doing probably $850 million a year in AOR, and they got me to start reading actual books on, you know, how to be successful in business, which I never did before. I never even, you know, really paid attention to any of that stuff. I read sales books and self-motivating books, but never, you know, accounting books or anything like that. And they really taught me the back end stuff. So I got to learn so much during that time. And actually got to help them too. You know, we all grew businesses together. And really, at the end of it, it made me wish that I would have done that step first. Before trying to open up my own company, I would have went out and done, you know, so many different things and really scaled my business at a proper pace and understand the fundamentals of how to create a good culture and not just, you know, crack the whip on everybody, because that's kind of how I grew up, you know. You work 7 days a week. It is what it is. That's just what we do. And instead of, you know, getting the understanding of, like, what a culture should be in a business. And that, you know, that was a game changer for me.
But when you got all that down, this company comes in, they showed you what you did wrong. They probably even said, these are some things that you are doing right. And then you were working for them, but somewhere along the line, you told yourself, because there is an entrepreneur, like my boss, Jerry, is an entrepreneur. He's got that entrepreneur spirit. And he, when he started Custom Cooling, bought a small shop and then went all in. And I give huge, like, credit, huge, like, whatever he wants, Jerry gets. Like, he's just an all in guy. I'm not an entrepreneur. Like, I don't want to own a business. I make a better employee than I do an owner. You make a better owner than you do employee. And somewhere out of all this, you said, I've got to go into business for myself again.
Well, I think I just saw, you know, I saw the gleam in the owner's eye that was running this big company. And I knew deep down inside, I have so much more to offer. And I wasn't able to do it. I was wearing a suit and tie every day to the office, and my hands were, confined. I couldn't do what I wanted to do all the time, And there was times where, I couldn't do branch out. I couldn't just branch out. So when I left, I bounced around a little bit and tried to find myself, like, what does Keith want to do? I got into consulting. That's what HVAC got. I also own a consulting firm, so I do reach out. I do have to send out a client, and I go and do sales training or culture training and this, that, and the other for their businesses. But I got into, that because I was like, man, there's so much more I can teach people. But I didn't want to be that guy that, just went around teaching people, because there are consultants out there that are good at doing that, but they also don't own a business. So they're just telling people what they're doing wrong, and this is my way. And I'm like, that's not the right way either. So during, a lot of years, it took a soul search, and I picked up a lot from podcasts and books, and I just always have had that drive to be, take something to the next level and try and be an innovator. And my biggest thing is, I want to create a legacy, I don't want to just create the wealth. I want the legacy. It's not always about the money. People see me out there and they see, I have nice cars, I have nice houses, I live in Newport Coast, but it's not about, I can tomorrow get rid of it all and go right back to country living. It's more about building a legacy for my family and my name. I really enjoy going and speaking at schools. I enjoy getting a kid off the street and talking to him and saying, hey, look, this is a great industry. Whether they stay with me or not, let me show you a couple things, because you can build a great, business for yourself. You can create a great life for your family, because it's a blue-collar thing that went away for years. But blue-collar's back, baby. It's 100% back. And blue-collar's where it's at. There's guys in this industry that are working for other guys like myself that are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Or there's guys that are making $60,000, $70,000 a year. And both sides, they're content. Some guys want more. Some guys want to work, be done at 5 and go to the kids' soccer games, go to the kids' baseball games. Or there's some guys that don't care about that, and they want to go out there and just build and build and build and build and build. And hopefully, I'm building those guys to become great competitors someday. Because that's what my end game is, to create great competitors all throughout our industry. I mean, that's what I love to see. I hate seeing a one-shot truck guy showing up, and they struggle, they have no idea what they're doing. I love grabbing those guys, and I've had numerous guys come into my offices now, and I'll sit them down and I'll explain to them how to look at a P&L. No charts, I'm doing it free just because I want them to understand, this is how to do it. I've fallen numerous times, and I've gotten back up numerous times.
But one of those places, and listen, everything you're saying, that's like a whole nother podcast. We could talk the whole another hour about what we both do. What you do is fantastic. And, I try to get out to trade schools, and you're preparing people to own businesses. I spend my time preparing techs on how to get jobs, improving their interview skills and their resume skills. But before we end up, because we're already at 40 minutes, before we end up, That's okay. Listen, you're going to be a part two, because people are going to be like, I want to hear more, and I'm cool with that. Talk about Smart Choice. How did Smart Choice come about?
So Smart Choice came about me doing my consulting thing. I started getting more and more clients, doing more and more speaking engagement. And my wife, she is my driver. She's my backbone. She'll never listen to this, she told me, look, you're telling a great story, but you got to show people you can actually do it. And so, almost 2 years ago, I ran into an old employee that had a little business. They were doing about $700,000 a year. 2 years ago. And it was him and his dad and a couple of employees at a little call center. And, well, you know, they were doing all right. They had three trucks and, you know, three or four employees. And like I said, 700 a year. And he goes, Keith, let's join forces. Let's do something. You know, my wife was like, hey, how great of a story would it be if you did it all over again? And I was like, yeah, you know, maybe it is. And sure enough, I jumped in with both feet. And, you know, our first full year, we did over five. Great growth. We had 48 employees now. We went from 3 employees.
But you didn't take and just do that all in one shot. You bought this guy's business, or you went in partnership with him.
I went in partnership with him.
And then the mistakes that you had made that in the previous businesses, you understood now about a P&L, because it did in a weird way. It happened, you know, like when I'm in California, I'm in Southern California. I drive around, you know, doing my thing, what I need to do for business, and I see Smart Choice trucks everywhere. So you're doing what you're supposed to do, but as a business, though, you're having to watch your it goes back to your account receivables and your account payables. So you're back to watching that now, because I'm sure that you probably have a bookkeeper or a CFO or somebody who or a controller that watches it for you. But you still have to understand, and that's what I want people to know as owners or people of potential owners, you have to understand your business model and what your business mission is before you can move forward.
Well, you have to have a business plan. And I had a business plan worked out. I hired a young controller. She was just an accountant straight out of school. She was very smart. Because I can't look at it daily if I'm trying to grow this thing as fast as I'm growing it. And you have to understand where your numbers need to be. You got to pay attention to it on a daily basis. So she sends me reports. You have to have good software. We run ServiceTitan. But yes, you have to when we sat down, my partner sat down, he said, look, I'm going to go out and sell. You do your thing. He knows what he's not good at, but he knows what he's great at. And same with me. So it's a good balance between the two of us. And I know now I have what we call, you know, the Bible. And it just tells me what percentages I should be running at. And I just pay attention to it. And when we're off a month, we're off a month. Okay, let's fix it. I get my P&L by the third, so I know where I'm off. And if we're making money, great. If we're breaking even, okay, if we're losing money, let's fix it quick. But we really, like, have good structure. We have an operations manager that, you know, kicks us in the butt when me and my partner aren't, you know, doing things right. Like, trust me, having a partner is not the easiest thing in the world. So, you know, having somebody in between us is really good. I highly recommend it, which we have my operations manager, Christina, gets in between me and Chris Munoz and says, hey, guys, look, you guys are losing focus. So we know when we're doing things wrong, but we keep it among, you know, between ourselves. And we have these meetings. She gets in there about 4:30 in the morning. I get in usually around 5:30, and we discuss things, figure out what our plan of attack is. And then by 7 o'clock, everybody else starts rolling in. We have a meeting at 7:30 to 8 o'clock, and then we roll out. But you've got to know, you know, vendors will help you tremendously, which I've learned a lot over the years. You can get huge rebates from your vendors to help you grow your business. You got to create great partners, and you just got to think outside the box. And that's, you know, our marketing is 100% social media. That's our only marketing.
Right.
Well, fuck that.
Yeah, I mean, you do other things too. I mean, you're not getting tons of sales. Your Smart Choice social media, does it do really well? I know it probably does really well on Facebook because everybody recommends a Facebook.
Well, our social media is what. So we had a call center until the COVID thing hit, and we were told we couldn't have more than 9 people in our office at any given time because we have a big bullpen. So we cut our call center off, got rid of our call center, and we went 100% social media. So our Instagram, we get on average a week right now, and we work from 750 to 100,000 views in the Orange County area. That's unheard of. That's literally unheard of. And we are driving that. I have a full social media team that literally drives Smart Choice Co. We have four. We have HVAC God, Smart Choice Co., Smart Choice Tech, and then Smart Choice Air. The reason why we do four different ones, we like different fields, and we like to see what's working and what doesn't work.
Right.
But if our social media team has done, you know, extreme amount of work and effort, and I got to give them all the props in the world to carry through. We're coming off a phenomenal month, and this month we're already beating our last year's sales revenue.
Well,
and everybody else is
that's awesome. I'm sorry, go ahead, because we just got a few minutes left. So is there anything that, you know, we're probably going to do part two, so if you're listening to this, like, no, I don't want Keith to end. Well, we're going to come back to Keith. Is there anything that you would leave somebody with, like if you had a minute? What does Keith live by? Like mine is, people hear it all the time, which is do the right thing, risk the consequences. What does Keith live by?
Get rid of your keys. And what that means is get rid of your keys. You go on my social media, you'll see it everywhere. Get rid of your keys. Is you have that extra key in your top drawer or on your key ring. You have no idea what it goes to, but you hang on to it because you never know when you might need it. That's what a lot of guys go into business, and they have so much extra clutter in their head and bad head trash, or they're going up to their next service phone, their last customer was mad, or the night before they stepped in dog food. Let go of that old crap and just know that every call, every day is a new day. And that's what I tell everybody. Get rid of your keys. And a lot of people go, what does that mean? And that's what it means. Just know that today's a new day. And we're starting something new. Whatever happens, maybe we lost a ton of money yesterday. Tomorrow's a new day. Let's look forward to that big windshield, not the little rearview mirror, and know that today's a new day.
And get rid of your keys.
Get rid of your keys.
All right. Well, this is going to end it for part one. This is Keith Flores. How can we find you? Don't give your email, but I think it's smartchoice.com.
SmartChoice SoCal. .com.
SmartChoiceSoCal.com.
And then everywhere else is you can find me and reach out directly to me. I'll respond directly as HVAC God. And that's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, or my email, or I have a website too, HVACGod.com.
HVACGod.com. So it's a huge, there's a lot there. There's a lot in this podcast, and I probably, people should go back and listen to it again because there's a lot there, and we're going to do a part two, so just be patient. For me,
I'm excited.
Yeah, for me, it's all about, you know, do the right thing, risk the consequences, but please, and I tell everybody all the time, please be good humans and wrap your arms around the ones that need some love. There's so many people out there that just need some love, and you just, they're right next to you. They could be a coworker. They could be just people at home. There could be a neighbor that is struggling and just needs somebody to come over and say, hey, can I get some groceries for you, or do you want to go to Taco Bell and have lunch, or, you know, can I take the trash out? I mean, just something, but just wrap your arms around the ones you love and take care of those that need some love. And as always, work safe, be safe, be good humans, and we'll see you next time.